Thank you. I'm an alcoholic. I'm with Victoria. Thank you again for coming to Simple Actions tonight.
Hi, Victoria.
For those of you who care to join us, let's start off with a serenity prayer, please. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. Please note that these premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. We also respectfully ask that those present refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purposes, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. The alcohol preamble reads as follows. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And we encourage it so much that we will have probably dinner at Plaza del Sol after the meeting. This evening, we are on Step 4, Part 2, page 67 in your book, if you'd like to turn to it. We do have two speakers tonight. Immediately to my right is David. He is a member of Simple Actions Group. And at the end, we have the lovely KH. She is from the Ocean View Speakers Meeting, and we are so happy to have her here tonight. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
The format of this meeting is that I will read a paragraph, the first paragraph on the page, and then the panel will share for a few moments in each on each reading. And before we get started, to keep distractions to me, let's go ahead and pass the seven tradition basket. We are self-supporting. Each group, the seven traditions, as each group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses itself, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local offices, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to spiritual connection that unites all groups in the world. Thank you. Step 4, Part 2, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not, ourselves, set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. This seems to cause more trouble.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David. My sobriety date's October 24th, 1989. I'm a member of this group, Simple Actions Group. I'm a guy who would have, I got here when I was 22 years old, and you guys told me what it meant to be an alcoholic. You guys told me that I had a body that once I started drinking, a craving would develop that wouldn't be satisfied. I thought that was an interesting theory, but I had control over the situation, so sure, sorry, you guys had to turn in your fun card. And that I had a mind that once I stopped drinking, my mind is going to talk me into having a drink. So you guys planted that simple message with me that I was bodily and mentally different than other people, and I had 6 more years of drinking to do, trying to figure that out, trying to move the pieces around, change it to Friday night, or just weekend drinking. I don't know if you've ever done the weekend drinking thing, but you get a little flexible when the weekend starts on Thursday and finishes up around Wednesday sometime, and you get a good solid 5 hours of remorse and call it good, then you got to start drinking again. So I tried to prove you guys wrong for all that time, and my surrender to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I got here, I was 28 years old. I was 6 months abstinent of alcohol, and I knew 2 things. I knew that I did not want to drink anymore, and I knew that I was about to get drunk. I know what it feels like to be about to get drunk. And I came to AA one more time, and all I know is somebody welcomed me. Somebody showed me where the coffee pot was, and they made me feel comfortable enough to sit and listen to what you guys had to say. And in that moment, I remember saying to myself that I will do what these people do. And I have not had a sincere desire to take a drink since that day. But it took 6 years to just get that willing. Just that little tiny amount of willingness was a beating that I had to take. And I would have gotten here, I would have told you that I'm not a guy who's afraid of anything. I'm full of a lot of Irish courage, as long as I'm drinking, you can't even threaten me with death. Don't tell me, if you're an alcoholic, David, you can't drink safely. Well, that doesn't interest, I'm not interested in drinking safely. I like getting ripped out of the frame completely unsafe drunk. I just regrettably, ridiculously fallen down, hammered drunk. And if you keep going at this, David, you're going to die. And when I'm drinking, I don't care about that either. Could you make that happen by Thursday? Because the rent's due. And, I'm cool with getting off this ride. I've seen a lot of stuff. I've had a good time. So here I think that I'm not afraid of anything. I think I'm in control of the situation. And alcohol beat that out of me. When I got willing enough to do one of these inventories, reviewing my fears thoroughly, the first thing that I noticed was that, I'm telling you all that to just tell you that I came here and I was willing to get a sponsor, I was willing to join a home group, and I was willing to start going through these steps. And none of that has been perfect in my journey, but I do remember writing that inventory, and my number one fear is a fear of being alone. And when I say alone, I don't mean by myself, because I'm happy in my own company. I'm a gadget guy. I'm a piddler. I like projects. I got an engineering mind. I like being alone, by myself. But I mean like friendless, like abandoned, alone. That kind of alone. It's my number one fear. And then I got through with looking at that on paper, and that's interesting. And then I wrote down my number two fear. My number two fear is a fear of people. So there it is in black and white. My number one fear is a fear of being alone, and my number two fear is a fear of people. And I realized in that moment that no wonder I need chemical assistance to get along in the world. I'm not very comfortable most of the time. And so I come to find out as I do these, as I do this inventory, that I'm afraid of tons of stuff. My whole life is riddled with fear. Most of it is self-centered in nature. Most of it is David worried to death that he's not gonna get something that he thinks he has to have, or I'm going to lose something that I have that I think I need, and it's going away, and so I act accordingly. I set these things in motion. That statement that it ought to be classed with stealing, I mean that seems like pretty heavy. But when I think about it, when I'm running around threatened, that she's going to leave, or that I'm going to lose the job, or I'm going to lose the house, or I'm going to whatever, just something I'm frightened of, then I start to act on that information. I start going into proactive mode and trying to protect those things. And if I got to lie to do that, if I got to steal to do that, you know, that's not a problem for me at all. And to this day, I'm 25 years on the other side of a drink and active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This stuff isn't as bad as it used to be, but I promise you, if you back me up in that corner and frighten me, I will lie to you. In a heartbeat. So yeah, the good news is as we continue here and these fears start to take their place and I start to learn what to do about them, I don't have them as much. It's not ruling my life like it used to. But I would have got here, I would have told you I'm not afraid of anything. Thanks. I'm so excited Kay's here.
I'm not. Hi, everybody. My name is Kay. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
My sobriety date is February 22nd, 1986. My home group is the Ocean View Speakers Meeting, which meets on Monday night at 7 o'clock. And it's so interesting that I'm here tonight because I have a huge resentment about this meeting. You all are taking all our people away. I'm going to write about it one of these days.
But in the future.
Really, when Dave asked me, I said, well, I was wondering when you were going to ask. I've heard so much about this group and really good stuff. And so I am happy to be here. But fear. I liked everything Dave said about fear, and I know what he's talking about intimately. When we were back there praying, my prayer is always before I speak or get up to do anything is help me not lie, because lying helps ease my fear. I don't know why, but like Dave, if you back me up against the wall, if I'm afraid, I'm a good liar, and that I think that will help me. I know today that it doesn't help me and that it will kill me, but for a very long time I didn't know, and drunk or sober, fear has ruled my life. My first memories as a child, before I ever had a drink, were being afraid of everything. I was afraid in the bosom of my family. I couldn't be comfortable. I didn't feel like them. I went to school. I couldn't be comfortable. I wasn't like them. Everywhere I went, you know, it was horrible. There were all these people that were okay and I wasn't. And that scared me because I didn't want to be like that. You know, I looked at them and wanted to be like that they were. And it just didn't seem possible to me. And then at the age of 16, I took my first drink. And for the first time, my fear was slain. It was dead. That drink hit the bottom, and I wasn't afraid. You know, I was okay. I was like you. You know, I was like all those people I was looking at. And my fear was just, it disappeared. And who wouldn't want to feel that way? I know I wanted to feel that way all the time. Because that's how I am. I want to feel, you know, really good all the time. and alcohol helped me do that in the beginning. And it was such a powerful effect on me that, well, we all talk about it. It was magical. It was it affected me profoundly. And looking back on it, I didn't think of it in these terms at the time. I just knew it was great. But looking back, I know that it was a spiritual thing that happened to me when I took that first drink. It was, in some crazy way. And I look for that all the time. The book, one of the stories in the book talks about alcoholics suffering from spiritual starvation. You know, so I'm born hungry for something, wanting something. And I don't know what it is, but I know there's something out there. And then I get alcohol and that's the something. So that's really powerful stuff for me, and it is an evil and corroding thread through the fabric of my life. It's affected every relationship I've ever had. It's affected every aspect of my life, you know, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional. I'm not getting ready to cry. I have allergies. My voice cracks up sometimes. I was sharing one time, and a friend said afterwards, he said, Kay, what's wrong with you? You sound like you're having a freaking nervous breakdown. And I said, just allergies. But but fear is, you know, and what do you do with it? I come in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you guys say, you can't drink anymore. Oh, no. I was terrified of that. So afraid. I can't drink anymore. What am I going to do? How am I going to live? You know, I just, even though alcohol was really a problem and I knew it, I was just so afraid. How am I supposed to live without it? You know, I have no experience with that. I remembered how I was as a child. I didn't like that. I didn't want to live like that. I couldn't. I really, you know, I'd rather have died drunk, I think, than to live like that. And as Dave said, the things I'm afraid of are, sometimes they're real, and you know, there are real fears in the world, but most of the time it's stuff in my mind. Like tonight, you know, I've been sober a long time, and I am sober, and I do have a power in my life, and yet I walk in this room full of people, most of whom I know, all of whom I know I love, because you've saved my life, and I come in here and I'm afraid of you. But not for so long anymore. You know, today I know that that fear is okay. Dave talked about being alone. When I first came in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the first things I remember hearing was, you never have to drink again if you don't want to, and you never have to be alone again. And like Dave, I was, you know, I was so lonely. Lonely in a crowd, lonely by myself. And it wasn't from being around people or not around people. I was alone inside. There was nobody in here but me. And I was not up to the job of being okay. I needed something. I needed someone, some power. I didn't know that. I had no idea that lack of power was my problem. You know, that came later when I got all mental with sobriety. But I do know that when I came in here, I heard them say I didn't have to be alone again, and I like that. I was attracted to that. And today I don't have to be alone, but sometimes I forget that. And sometimes it takes me a little while to remember, you know, when I ask, my higher power draws near to me, but I have to ask. And he has not let me down. I can say that in all honesty, although I have frequently fought against relying on God to take away my fear. My sponsor will tell me after I've done inventory and had my moment, my quiet hour with God, and the thought comes to me that this is what I should do and it's not what I want to do. And I get on the phone and I'm like, you know, I think God's telling me to tell this person to go away, and I don't want to do that. And she said, well, if you think that's what God wants you to do, don't you think you should follow that? And I said, but I can't. And she said, well, then you have to ask God to help you. And sometimes that prayer sounds like this. God, if you want me to do this, you've got to help me because I can't. You know, and then I have to totally give myself over. There really, I have no power to do some of these things, hardly anything. And so I'm frequently asking God for help for this. And the reason I can't do this is because I'm afraid. What if it's the wrong decision? What if it's not God talking to me? What if it's me talking? You know, so at some point I have to quit that. I have to quit all that thought and say, if this is what you want me to do, you have to show me clearly, clearly, because I am not the brightest crayon in the box. And I need clear direction, clear guidance. It does cause me a lot of trouble. fear will make me do terrible things. It will make me lie to people I love. It will make me lie when I don't have to. It will make me avoid the thing that becomes my greatest joy. So often, fear tells me, say no. And boy, did I hate it when I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous that we can't say no in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, oh no, because I always say no. My first reaction is no, no, no. and then my second reaction is no. That's who I am. And I mean, in sobriety, that's who I am. Well, I knew this was going to happen. So one of the greatest spiritual experiences I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous was someone asked me to be a chairperson for Saturday on the James, which is coming up shortly. And I said no. And I was in a period in my life where I was not drinking, but I was not sober. And I was dying in sobriety. And so God sent me this person to do this great thing, and I said no. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous and you sneaky drunks. Because my good friend Bob Hickey came up to me and he put his arm around me and he said, Kay, we really want you to be the chair. And I said, no, I'll be the co-chair. I'm scared. I don't know how to do it. And he said, but Kay, we need someone like you. You're a lightning rod. And my ego said, ooh, a lightning rod. I like that, you know, because I am alcoholic. I like being center of things. And so he tricked me into saying yes. And as a result of that, I overcame a huge fear. And I grew spiritually. And it probably is a huge reason why I'm sitting here tonight. And I'm really grateful for that. Thank you.
Thanks, Kat.
Top of page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. But we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely on him does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear.
Thank you. Okay, so perhaps there's a better way. I love that language. Perhaps there's a better way, David. Oh, really? Maybe I'll look into that. So it's suggesting here that we trust this infinite God rather than our finite selves. And in the paragraph before, he basically pointed out that self-reliance had availed me nothing to date. That you know, all the way up in the book, the whole way we come here is this idea that David relying on his power, on his ingenuity, on his management scheme, you know, has not worked. My life is unmanageable. My life is unmanageable. Even sober? Even sober, David. That's a hard one for me to get. So this different basis that we're talking about, he introduced here in step three, where he talked about, you know, first of all, we have to quit playing God. Well, only a crazy person would play God, right? You know, but if I look in my own little sphere of influence, my own little place where I go to work and where I live and the people that I interact with, my home group, I start thinking I know what's best. I know what's best for me. I know what's best for you. And certainly you would want me to point that out, you know. And certainly, I mean, it would be selfish of me to keep that information to myself. So I get myself in trouble over and over again in this regard, because David is used to relying on David, my opinion, my judgment, my assessment of the situation. And you guys invite me to rely on this power greater than myself. What if God was in charge, David? How would you feel then? What if everything was fine despite your opinion of it? How would you feel then? You know? What if, you know, I just think about, like, standing on the moon and looking at this blue ball just out in space. This planet is doing fine, you know? It's doing fine, and it's going to keep doing what it's doing long after I've gone. I'm the ant riding on a log down a river thinking he's steering the thing, you know? I'm of absolutely no consequence in this thing. But how does that help me on a daily basis? The most recent example that I can come up with in terms of big stuff is I was absolutely petrified that I was going to lose my house. Now, I've been to the brink of bankruptcy in sobriety. I've been to the brink of divorce in sobriety. I have buried people that I love in sobriety. You know, bad stuff has happened. Things that I was afraid would happen actually did. You know, because that's what living on the planet does to people. Stuff happens. But I was petrified I was going to lose my house. So I consulted myself about that. And myself told me some things to do. And so I started, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul and moving a little bit of money around over here and begging and borrowing, blah, 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 blah. And I held it together, you know, for about 10 months. And I was anxious the whole time. I was just absolutely full of anxiety all the time. If you asked me how I was doing, I would have told you, yeah, fine, you know. And but I was petrified I was going to lose the house. And like everything else in my life, I have to experience, just like drinking. I had to drink until I couldn't hardly drink anymore. I couldn't stand it anymore. Well, I had to run this little house show until I couldn't stand the pain of that anymore. And I do inventory, and it brings me to these prayers. And I got to this place, not from my own initiative, from doing what's suggested here, considering where self-reliance had failed me. You know, isn't it because self-reliance failed you, David? Yeah, it's failing miserably right now. But I get to a place where I go, you know what, God? This is your house. It's not my house. This is your house. And I get to be a custodian of it. And I'm a poor custodian of it. You know, I don't take care of things like I appreciate them. But the prayer is, God, if you, kind of like what Kay was talking about, if you want me to live here, show me how this is going to work. If you want some of your other kids to live here, then show me the grace to walk out of here, you know? Because I'm afraid not only of losing the house, and it's not for me. When I got into the inventory, I realized I didn't want to face my children. I didn't want to face my wife. I lost the house. I was afraid of that. Because I can live, I'm a deadhead. I can live, you know, I can live in the alley. I did not want to face my children. So if this is your house, show me if you want me to still live here. Make it plain to me. Kind of, my prayers are the same. My prayers are like, God, you and I both know I'm an idiot. Make this plain to me. And as soon as I took that position, and I tend to compress time in my head, it's almost like, you know, then the phone rang that afternoon. I don't think it happened like that, but I took that position, that anxiety started to lift, and I started being able to turn my thoughts and attention to things that were appropriate for that day. You know, like maybe going to work, or fixing a meal for my kids, you know, or helping another alcoholic or something like that. It just went on the back burner. And then all of a sudden, ways and means of keeping that house were shown to me. I mean, they just dropped in my lap. So this practice thing of relying on God is something that I will not claim anywhere near any. It's not a pretty perfect process for me. It's like making sausage. It's a messy, awful process for me, and usually I'm not willing to give anything up to the Father until I've convinced myself that I can't do anything about it really, and then I'm willing to let it go. You know, I'm done with it. This is way worse than it was before I started messing with it. Here you go. You know. Thank you.
It says here, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. And I'm not good at that. I, like Dave, I like to get in there. And I don't go around thinking I'm God, but I go around acting like God. When I was drinking, I decided my best friend shouldn't get married to this guy because I wanted her to marry my brother. And I was very much drinking. And so I went up to Cincinnati, Ohio, where she was living, and I met this guy, and I took him away, and I flirted, and he went back to Norfolk with me. And on the way back to Norfolk on the train, I said, this isn't going anywhere, you know, we're done. Because I had gotten what I wanted, and I had played God with her and him. I had no compunctions. I can remember not even thinking about it, saying, this is what I'm going to do, because I don't want this to happen. So that's how I acted drinking. And unfortunately, I have a tendency to do that sober if I'm not careful. I make decisions about things. I'm like George W. Bush in this way only. I'm the decider. I am the decider. I like to make decisions. And so I go around doing that, and I make them for me, and if you're not quick enough, I'm making them for you. And what happens as a result of that, most of you know, anybody that's heard me speak know that I lived with my mother for 10 years. She passed away in October. And I shared a whole lot about her because I made decisions for her. And we helped each other for sure. She took really good care of me, and I didn't take such good care of her because I'm kind of bossy and I like to run things. And I remember one day I was helping her put on her compression stockings. Now, if you all have ever done this, it is horrible. They're so tight and it's so hard. And I'm on the floor and I'm pushing and I'm sweating and I'm frustrated and I'm snapping at her. And all of a sudden, I just start crying. And I go in the bathroom and I'm bawling like a baby. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm a horrible daughter. I'm not taking good care of her. I'm doing all these things. I'm not being nice to her. I'm just overwhelmed. I'm like a basket case. I finally get myself together. Finally, you know, I get a grip on myself because I got to get a grip. That's another thing I do. I get a grip on myself. and I know, I said, you better talk to somebody about this. So I get on the phone to my sponsor, got my voice all right, no tears. And I say, you know, I'm having a little problem with Mom. And she said, really, what? And then I lost it. It just went. And I told her, I said, I'm a bad daughter. I don't know what to do. I'm not taking good care of her. I leave her alone. I just went on and on and on with this alcoholic exaggeration I have. It's not enough I'm a bad daughter, I'm the worst daughter. And so I spewed it all out over the phone, and she said, well, it sounds to me like you have the weight of the world on your shoulders. I said, well, that's what it feels like. And she said, well, you don't have to do that. Will you let someone help you? And I'm afraid of that. I don't know how to do that very good. And so I'm desperate, so I said, yes, I'll let someone help me. And she said, all right, I'm going to send my husband over with some food for you and your mother. And I'm going, I don't need food. That's not what I need. I know what I need. I didn't say that to her because she's my sponsor. But what I said was, oh, no, 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 you don't have to do that. She lives in Pecos and I live in Ocean View. No, no, don't do that. Don't make Michael come over and bring us food. We got food. She said, Kay, will you let yourself be helped? All right. And so he came over and he sat at my table with me and my mom. And we ate a little dinner and he talked and I calmed down. And when he left, I was helped. I felt different. Now, you know, nothing happened. That was no big, you know, spiritual burning bush, but something huge happened. It's really important for me to remember that God will demonstrate through me if I let him. And if I don't, he will let me do my own demonstration. And I have done plenty of those. I'll share one other thing and then I'll be done. My brother came to live with me to help with our mother, and he's a raging drinker like I was. And he just went crazy, and I was going crazy being an Al-Anon and trying to fix him and all this stuff. And this is, you know, me sober. And so we're in the library one day, and he said something about AA. He said, why don't you do an intervention on Cindy? That's on niece. And I said, we don't do interventions in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's, oh, yeah, that's all you all do. And I ended up screaming and yelling at him in the library. And people are looking, not at him, not at the drug. They're looking at me. I'm screaming and yelling at him, totally out of control. That's my demonstration when I don't ask God for help or look for that. So it does take courage to do this, and it takes effort. And I find that when I do trust God, when I do trust God through other people, when I let you help me, because God doesn't always just come down personally, but he always is there, that things go a lot better, and in very amazing ways. Thank you.
Thanks, Kat.
Thank you. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhaul there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It is so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of our troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They do not think we have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow no man no flavor for his fare, the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
All right. Straight pepper diet. Yeah. I just told Kay I was going to talk less because I'm talking too much. We're not getting enough for her. So I did get to go to the San Antonio convention in 2010, and there was a group of young people running around. There were like 50 or 60 of them. They all had the same T-shirt on, a black T-shirt with white letters that said, "Straight Pepper Diet."
I want one of those.
I was like, they're having a good time. So I don't know. You know, this paragraph basically introduces the idea that we all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. It's very popular in AA to say, you know, no relationships in the first year. It's like, that's not what the book tells me. You know, the book tells me we're going to stay out of that controversy. So, but it's interesting that it introduces this idea of our sex conduct being a problem. You know, so what can we do about it? And we're going to talk more about what we can do with it. I personally fall on the side of I have a tendency to see its significance everywhere rather than the other side where you're not paying too much attention to it. I'm very distracted by sex as a rule. That's it. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I fancy myself a pepper girl. That doesn't necessarily mean it's true. It just means I fancy myself. I see the significance of sex everywhere. And for me, someone told me one time, Kay, you just like to be provocative and get attention. That's it. I like to. And what better way? I got gray hair, you know, older. Let's talk about sex. Let's walk up to a group of young people and say something about sex. Gets a reaction every time. It's perfect. When I came in tonight, I was really, Dave asked me, he said, which do you want, resemblance or sex and fear? And I said, ooh, sex and fear, please. Because I like talking about this stuff. And when I came into AA, they may have been talking about it, but I don't remember it. And it pissed me off, because sex is important. And nobody was talking about it. You know, I know you can't just go out in an open meeting, but they weren't talking about it. When I came in tonight, I saw Jill, and she said, oh, are you going to be on the table? I said, yes, on the table again, because I, you know, like to make sex. We're back there praying. I'm so spiritual. We're back there praying. I'm looking through the glass. I can see you all so well. And I'm looking through the glass, and I'm thinking this is a one-way mirror thing, because they got nursing mothers back there. And I'm thinking to myself, when I was drinking, I had my favorite bar. And the owner was a special friend of mine because I could drink free in his bar. And he had a little room in the back, and it had a one-way mirror. And we would sit back there and drink liquor and watch everybody out front. It was awesome. I love that. You know, it was just great. We could see all of what was going on. Thank God they couldn't see it. So I see its significance everywhere. It is a problem, you know. It was a problem for me drinking. It's a problem. It will always be a problem, I think. It's a huge instinct. It's a huge part of life, and how could it not be a problem? And what we can do about it is really important to me. I want to know, because some of the most destructive behavior that I exhibited was in this area. And when I came in here, I was like just terrified again, because I thought I'm never going to have sex again, because I just you get drunk and have sex, and now they're saying I can't drink, so I'm never going to have sex again. And I'm like, well, I don't know if that's worth it. and I've got all these problems going on in my mind. And there's nobody sitting out there that didn't think the same thing. So I'm really excited about the solution to this problem, or part of the solution. So.
Thank you, Kay. Page 69. We review. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault, and what should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
I remember, you know, coming up to this point in the inventory, what was on my mind was all of the weird, twisted stuff I got myself into occasionally when I was drinking, all the things that I was going to take to my grave, some of the sexual, I love the idea that our personal adventures, that's one of the phrases we use and how it works. I had a few personal adventures out there, and I thought that was the stuff that I was very concerned about sharing with another human being. But when we get down to this inventory, what's he really asking us to inventory? Where had I been selfish? Where had I been dishonest? Where had I been inconsiderate? Whom had I hurt? And so when I start to look at that stuff, I'm selfish in every one of my relationships. You know, most of my relationships, particularly in the sexual arena, started with something I wanted. You know, they weren't. I wasn't me trying to seek a life partner or, you know, a nice person to. I wanted some sex. And I wanted to figure out how to get that. And so I will tell you anything. I will say anything. I will paint whatever picture I think I need to present to you. That's always the thing, right? It's not, I'm not telling you what you want to hear. I'm telling you what I think you want to hear. There could be a flaw in that chain there somewhere. So, you know, because most people just want you to tell them the truth. So I find that I am selfish. I am dishonest. I already laid that out for you. If I think telling the truth isn't going to get me what I want, then the truth's got to go. It's just, what else are you going to do with the truth? Tell it. And this idea of being inconsiderate, this is something that's really, really come to play a lot more into the front part of my mind. See, I don't spend much time considering you. I just don't. I spend my time considering me. And whether or not I'm going to have a good time, or whether the day is going to work out my way, or if all the things are going to happen the way that I want them to happen. And then I might consider you because I'm going to fit you in between 9:30 and 10:30 tonight. You know, you might have some other ideas. Now I got a problem. You know, so, but conversely, what should I have done instead? Just the act of considering somebody else. If I just take a moment to think about you. And it doesn't have to be in a sexual situation. If I just take a moment to think about my son, I realize that he's been telling me all week that he was worried about this test coming up, that he's worried about a job, you know, this summer, that he's kind of in the back of his mind, he's figured out that he's going to have to make his way in the world, you know, and that he's a little concerned about that. If I just think about those things, I'm instantly filled with compassion for him, and I'm instantly filled with things that I could do to help him, you know. Just the act of consideration attenuates my selfishness and my dishonesty and all these other negative sorts of things that are just with me as a selfish, self-centered person. If I'm just thinking about me, you know, then I'm in conflict with you. But if I consider you, just a simple act of consideration for me has to be a practice. I have to practice that. It does not come naturally. What comes naturally to me is what's in it for David, you know. So I can admit that to people. I'm not proud of that. But I can practice something different today because you guys have taught me to practice these things. Thanks.
In 1969, and I had to use that year, I was, but it's the truth, I was in love with, it was my first love, with this young man. And he was wild, and he liked to drink like I did and smoke, and I mean, I was just crazy about him. And he got involved with some family members, and they decided to rob somebody. And the guy had a gun that they were gonna rob, and he killed him. And I was 6 months pregnant at the time, 20 years old, drinking, pregnant, drinking, and I was mad that he was dead. So much for my consideration. He's dead, but I'm mad because God took him from me. Nowhere in there is there concern because he's dead, or that his family is bereft of their son and their brother. No, I'm mad because God took something I wanted from me. And I didn't see anything wrong with that. And everybody was like thinking it was okay. Oh, you poor thing, you poor thing. And I was so mad, I decided that I was just, I'm done with men. And so I didn't have anything to do with men for the next 25 years. And not much to do with God either, because he killed my boyfriend. And I was really pissed at that. And that was me being selfish and dishonest. I didn't even look at, you know, I knew what he was doing. I knew he was going to go out there and try to rob somebody. No consideration at all. I love that Dave talked about the consideration of us just considering other people. People don't, I just don't consider them sometimes. So that was at 20. 30 years later, I'm 15 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I meet a guy, and I'm in love again. You know, really in love. But I'm sober. You know, it's supposed to be different this time. But what happened was, again, no consideration. This guy happened to be married. No consideration. That was not the important part. The important part was I wanted him. And I was going to have him. And so with no consideration of his family, his children, his wife, his standing in the community, my standing in AA, I didn't even consider that. I went after this guy. Now, you would think, sitting here, that wasn't a very good thing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'm just going to sit here and tell you that because of that, a horrific time in my life, because of that, I got truly sober. If it had not been for that situation, I did so much sex inventory on this situation because I knew it was wrong. I had enough of AA under my belt to know this is just, you don't do this, you just don't do this. But I was powerless. I'm still powerless over a lot of things. And I was powerless over it. So I was writing inventory. I was talking to people. I was praying all the time. God, please take this obsession from me. Because it was an obsession. And as a result of that, I went to a meeting chasing another guy. Because what better way to get rid of an obsession than to find another guy? This one wasn't married. He was sober. That was my problem. He was sober. I was not. So I went to his home group to put myself in his way, and it happened to be a big book study, and they were on the doctor's opinion. And in the midst of all this untreated alcoholism and insanity in my life, God allowed me to hear what they were talking about, and it saved me. I think I would have gotten drunk, or maybe I would have lived in that mess. I don't know. I kind of hope I would have gotten drunk, because it was not good to live in it. And as a result of that selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate stuff, I met my sponsor today. I began working the steps out of the big book as they're written here. I'd never done that 15 years sober. I hadn't done a lot in AA. So because of that situation, I'm here tonight a different person, a more sober person. I've made amends. I have done what I was supposed to do. And I didn't get drunk. And I think the only reason I didn't get drunk was that I continued to ask God to please help me, although I then ignored all the help he offered. But I continued to try, and I continued to, you know, strive for that in the middle of it all. I am a very selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate person. Even today, sometimes I have difficulty. I'll hear myself sometimes, and I'll go like this and say, oh my God, because I'll hear what I'm really saying. And it's not good. But I am part of the process, and at least today I can hear it. And I truly believe God lets me hear it when I'm supposed to, and then he's provided me with the method to deal with it if I can. We have an ideal, it says. It says in a vision for you, it talks about the ideal man or the ideal woman. And I too have an ideal. And I, you know, it was never my ideal to hurt people. It wasn't my ideal to lie to people, to use them. That wasn't my ideal. But when I was drinking, I was powerless. It was, you know, that's what I did. I won't say I didn't know better. Everybody knows better. But I just couldn't not do it, you know, and then I could drink and forget it, and it was fine. And in sobriety, I had an ideal, but I can only work towards it. And try to make right the harm I've done. I'm sitting here, and I thought this would be so easy, and it's not. And the reason it's probably not easy is I have unwritten inventory in this area of in consideration of people and using people. And so I'm feeling, I think, hypocritical. And so I need to tell you that. And it's hard. You can tell the other stuff flowed easy. This isn't. And so that means there's work I have to do. And I will do it. Thanks.
Thanks, Kate.
Okay, we're running a little short of time, so I'm going to read the remainder of the information here. We'll have two quick comments from our panelists, please. Continuing on page 69 and on to page 70, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come when we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel to persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself.
I always read this, whatever your ideal turns out to be. I thought that was sort of my opportunity to make a little list of like the perfect mate, you know, for me, you know, I could imagine that. And it was pointed out to me that, you know, that these were ideals. Like if I value reciprocity and consideration and honesty in a relationship, then I could learn how to do those things myself. and the other line I'll just throw out the basic, and I love the idea that we just treat sex as we would any other problem. And basically the language in there, if you read it, he's basically telling us to do the steps. Just take whatever problem is and run it through the grinder of the steps. And then there's a specific instruction. If you do find sex very troublesome, David, how about you just throw yourself harder into helping other people? That'll take your mind off it for a minute, and you might do some good along the way. I've got a great story about that, but you'll have to ask me after the meeting.
Okay. Thank you, David.
I like that part about throwing yourself harder into working with others. That was not my plan when I was in the middle of all this. But I went to my my first sponsor, who was my sponsor for 20 years. She was she helped me a lot, and I loved her a lot. And I went to her and told her what was going on. I told her the truth, finally. And she said, you have got to start sponsoring somebody or helping somebody. You have to get out of yourself. That's the only thing that's going to save you. And I wasn't sponsoring anybody. Imagine that. And so I said, well, I don't really want to do that. I was having so much fun wallowing in all this stuff. But, you know. But so I started going to a lot of meetings out of desperation. And like I said, sometimes I was looking for guys. But sometimes I was just going to meetings because I didn't know what else to do. And as a result of me being so visible, just everywhere I was there, you know, I went 2-3 meetings and there I am, you know. And a woman came up to me and asked me to sponsor. And I, again, burst into tears and I thanked her because I knew I had to do something and, you know, nothing was happening. And so I started working with her. And then I started working the steps with my present sponsor, and oh, I don't know what happened, but she calls it waking up. I was waking up. And so all of a sudden, I was the it girl. I mean, I was the soup du jour. Everybody was asking me to sponsor them. I was hot shit. I mean, I was walking around with all my girls and, you know, strutting in meetings with my posse. And, you know, I had all these women, and it was great for my ego. And I, looking at this today, I say, well, God was really saving me with all of them. You know, it wasn't because I was so much. It was God helping me out, and I needed a lot of help. And for a while there, it was like a big deal. And then I quit counting. Somebody said, how many people do you sponsor? I said, I don't know. If you ask me today, I don't know. You know, when people call and talk to me, I talk to them. We work together. We do the book. I don't keep a list anymore. You know, I don't do that. But I'm willing to help anybody, anytime. I will give everything I've got. Because there's so many people who've given everything for me, who've listened to me whine, who listened to me talk endlessly about this stuff, you know. And I know I was boring them to death, because I get bored today when other people do it. But they were so kind, and they let me read all this endless self-serving inventory. And so today, you know, when I get a little, oh my God, again, on the phone, I have to remember, people did that for me. And they saved my life, you know? And what the hell? Sometimes it's interesting, and sometimes it's not, but so what? You know, it's what we do. We help each other. And I am so willing to do that.
Thank you, Kay and David. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Speaker July 28th will be from Richmond. Will be here. It's 6 o'clock on the potluck. Please feel free to bring whatever you want. 7 o'clock the meeting will start. Are there any other announcements?
Alcoholic. Yeah. There's a women's meeting from 3 to 4 in East Desert, so all of Catherine.
Thank you.
Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. Well, home group members, please raise your hand. If you're interested in joining this home group, please look around. Get with someone after the meeting that has their hand up. Newcomers, is there anyone here within the first 30 days of sobriety when you did this meeting? Yes, sir. Can you state just your full name so we can get to know you?
First name.
I've been. Welcome.
Julie, welcome.
My name is Harry.
Harry, welcome.
My name is Chad.
Chad, welcome.
My name is Antoine, and I'm a functioning alcoholic.
Keep coming back, we'll fix that.
First time at the meeting, Nicholas, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Nicholas, welcome. Katrina, welcome. Eric, welcome.
I'm Roxanne. I'm an
alcoholic. Roxanne, welcome.
Welcome, man.
Welcome.
My name is Brandon. I'm an alcoholic.
Brandon, welcome.
Great. Thank y'all for being here. We're very delighted to see you. There is literature on the table over here. And there will be home group people here if you're interested in sponsorship. Sponsorship, NAA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we will have two people up here at the table to talk to you about that. Let's see, we have David and Casey, if you'll raise your hands. Casey's way in the back. She'll be up here with David if you have any questions about sponsorship. We thank Kay and David again for sharing. It was a really good meeting. David will be at Pascal Soul to go over this excellent, exciting story that he couldn't finish here at the panel.
Yeah, we're going to go to Plaza del Sol and talk about sex, so come on.
The juicy stuff.
Yeah.
Can't miss that. Does somebody have their book open to page 164? Can read the last two paragraphs?
I'll get it.
Thank you.
My name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Evan.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose to you and to us. More to you and to us. I knew there was something there. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you drudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen.
Thank you, Evan. And Simple Actions closes with the Lord's Prayer. If you'd like to join us.
That's great. Thank you.
The power and glory forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.